Welcome back to Mama Mystery. I am your host, Kelly, and before we dive into today's episode, we have got to talk about this new Netflix documentary called Unknown Number. I just watched it over the weekend. I actually had to watch it twice because I could not believe what I was seeing. And when you go back and you rewatch it after having all the information and you go back and watch it again, it is really just infuriating and maddening. So if you don't already know, this is a case out of Beale City, Michigan, where this girl, Lauren, and her boyfriend, Owen, started receiving these text messages from an unknown number. And the messages are actually so vile. I mean, the messages, like, just to give you an example, are telling them to kill themselves. They're telling Lauren that Owen wants nothing to do with her anorexic flat ass and like all these horrific. I mean, that's not even really scratching the surface. I just know that we have some young people that listen to this podcast sometimes. And I was watching it and I can't even repeat it, some of the stuff that was being said. And when you find out at the end who was behind these messages, it will blow your mind. And then when you rewatch it and you watch this person's interview throughout the documentary, it is just even more maddening. I don't want to give it away in case you want to go watch it. If you do go watch it, let me know in the comments what you think of it. If you want me to do an episode on that and see if I can dive even a little bit deeper. Although I will say the text messages that are involved in the doc are all real text messages that were pulled from the case files. And I think there was over like 350 pages of text messages like this that were going to Lauren, her boyfriend, and then multiple other kids throughout the high school. It is absolutely insane. It is one of the most mind-blowing documentaries I've seen in a while. So if you haven't gone and seen it or watched it yet, make sure you do and let me know what you think. And without further ado, we're going to get into a story, another just baffling story. This is the case of Chandler Halderson. So buckle up because we're about to dive in. Let's go. In the summer of 2021, Chandler Halderson was 23 years old and living at home with his parents, Bart and Krista, in Windsor, Wisconsin. Now, from the outside, he seemed like a fairly typical young guy who hadn't quite spread his wings yet, maybe like a little failure to launch situation, if you will. But he was an Eagle Scout, which was something that his family was very proud of. And he came across as very polite and unassuming to neighbors and friends. He was really smart. And like a lot of people his age, Chandler was still working through school and deciding what was going to come next. He told people he was pursuing an IT degree at Madison College, and he was right on track to finish. And then to make things even more exciting, he shared that he had landed a job opportunity that sounded almost too good to be true, working remotely with SpaceX, Elon Musk's aerospace company. So for friends and family, it was easy to believe that Chandler was on the cusp of stepping into a promising career. Now at home, his parents were very supportive. Bart, a longtime accountant, was known for being very steady, practical, and proud of his sons. Krista, who worked in human resources, was the kind of mom who showed up for her kids, whether that meant school functions, sports, or just everyday encouragement. Together, they had built a comfortable life in Windsor, where neighbors described them as friendly and reliable. Chandler's older brother had already moved out, leaving Chandler as the last one under their roof. Now, life at the Halderson house looked calm enough from the outside, but those closest to Chandler knew that there were a few bumps under the surface, and no family is perfect, but it's usually your closer friends or your significant other who really know about that or the details of that. So Chandler had mentioned some health issues to his girlfriend and some of his friends. He had suffered a severe concussion after he fell down some stairs, and he said that this left him with lingering problems like vision issues, dizzy spells, and difficulty walking at times. He even sported a neck brace, which was featured in some of his family pictures. He sometimes talked about how this concussion kept him from driving long distances or made it hard to do certain tasks, and it seemed to be a part of the reason that he stayed home and leaned so heavily on his parents. But despite that, Chandler was not isolated. He had a steady girlfriend, a young woman named Kat Melanetter, who he had been dating for a while, and he spent a good deal of time with her and her family. Her parents welcomed Chandler onto their rural property in Cottage Grove, which is about 15 miles from his house. For them, he wasn't just the boyfriend of their daughter. He was around often enough that he almost felt like part of their family. He tagged along for gatherings, he hung out at the house, and sometimes even helped with little things around the property. It gave him another support system outside of his own home. For his girlfriend, Chandler seemed to be a guy working through the usual growing pains of his early 20s. He talked about his classes, about the opportunities that he was chasing, and about the future that he imagined for himself. And when he shared that he was on the verge of finishing college and stepping into a job at SpaceX, she had every reason to be proud of him and excited for their future. Their future, it seemed, was wide open. But as June of 2021 rolled into July, the rhythm of life at the Halderson home began to shift. Conversations about school and work were becoming more frequent, and Bart, in particular, had some questions. Like many parents, he wanted to make sure that his son was on track, that the degree was wrapping up as expected, that the new job was lined up, that Chandler was preparing for some independence. And I think they were probably itching to just kind of become those empty nesters and get all of their kids out of their house so they could step into the next phase of their life. Chandler always had the answers, though they sometimes involved rescheduled meetings, delayed paperwork, or computer glitches that kept things from moving forward. It sounded frustrating, but not impossible. And this brings us to Thursday, July 1st of 2021. That afternoon, Chandler's mom, Krista, clocked out of work a little after 5 p.m. and headed home. Nothing seemed unusual about her day. At some point later that evening, Chandler and his parents were all together at the house. What happened inside those walls over the next several hours would become the focus of one of Wisconsin's most baffling and disturbing investigations. But in real time, nobody outside the Halderson home had any reason to suspect that anything was wrong. The very next morning, Chandler told Krista's employer that his parents had left early, like really early, like 5 a.m., for a spontaneous weekend trip to the family's cabin in White Lake, Wisconsin. He explained that they'd gone up north with another couple, though he couldn't seem to pin down exactly who that couple was, but also said they don't get great service up there, especially if it's cloudy. So that's why he was the one to be letting people know where they were. So the cabin trip made sense on the surface. It was also the 4th of July weekend, after all, and Bart and Krista did enjoy time at their cabin. So when Chandler shared that detail, it made sense. It didn't raise any alarm bells right off the bat. But almost immediately, little things did not add up. Krista was very dependable when it came to her job. If she was going to be gone, she called. If something changed, she gave her coworkers a heads up. So on Friday, July 2nd, she didn't show up for work and she didn't call in sick. So that set off alarm bells with her coworkers because it just was not like her. That same day, a family friend dropped by the house. Both of Bart and Krista's cars were still in the garage, which was strange since they supposedly left at dawn. Chandler answered the door wearing a fresh bandage on his foot, and he explained that he had cut his toe after breaking the fireplace glass while tossing a ball to the dogs, and that there was blood everywhere. But when the friend looked inside, they didn't see any blood. So the story sounded odd, but Chandler brushed it off as nothing serious. While the family and friends were quietly worrying about Bart and Krista, someone else noticed something strange on July 3rd. A witness reported seeing a young man who looked a lot like Chandler walking on Department of Natural Resources, or DNR, land near the Wisconsin River in the town of Roxbury, which is a good 20 miles from the Halderson home, and the man was carrying a large backpack. At the time, it didn't mean much. People hike that area all the time, especially over a holiday weekend. But when investigators circled back later, that tip would take on a chilling significance. So we'll circle back to that point. But by the 4th of July, friends and family were starting to wonder why they hadn't heard directly from Bart and Krista. Chandler, though, reassured everyone that everything was fine. He told people he had gotten a text from his mom that morning, actually, around 11 a.m. According to Chandler, the message said that they had arrived at the cabin, they were going to a parade that day, and would be home Monday or Tuesday. It sounded normal enough, even comforting. and if Krista was texting, then she had to be fine. Except later, investigators would learn that there was not a 4th of July parade in White Lake that year. Still, in that moment, nobody knew that. To Chandler's friends, his girlfriend, and even extended family, it looked like the Haldersons were just off enjoying a holiday weekend. Now, Chandler himself kept up appearances too. He spent part of the holiday with Kat and her family, hanging around their rural property in Cottage Grove. He seemed a little down, but with his supposed concussion and his parents away, there wasn't anything outwardly alarming. On Monday, July 5th, Chandler returned to Kat's family's property, this time without Kat. One of the women who lived there noticed him out by the shed with his SUV parked nearby and the back hatch open. She thought that his demeanor seemed despondent. There was something else that stood out that day, though. Vultures circling over the wooded area near where Chandler had parked. It was unsettling, but no one had connected the dots at the time. The farm was out in the country, and it wasn't unusual to see birds overhead. Chandler eventually left, and then life went on. But quick side note, though, am I the only one who sees vultures swirling overhead or like over some trees and wonder how close I am in proximity to a dead body in that moment? No, just me? Okay. At this point, on July 5th, Bart and Krista had now been out of contact for 4 days. Their cars sat unused in the garage, their phones were strangely quiet, and Chandler, who had an explanation for everything, was the only one relaying updates about where they supposedly were. By July 6th, Bart and Krista had been away at the cabin for 5 days now. For anyone who knew them, that was unusual. Both of them were very plugged into their routines, work, friends, family. A sudden extended getaway with no warning and no check-ins was just not like them at all. Friends and coworkers were now openly worried. One of Krista's colleagues mentioned again how odd it was that she hadn't called in before missing her shifts. Bart's friends noticed he hadn't been in touch either. If the Haldersons were really up north with another couple, surely someone would have heard something more concrete. On the morning of Wednesday, July 7th, Chandler finally took the step of reporting his parents missing. Around 11:30 a.m., he walked into the Dane County Sheriff's Office and told deputies that Bart and Krista had left early on July 2nd for the cabin in White Lake and hadn't returned. Deputies took him seriously right away. Missing adult cases are tricky because grown adults have the right to take off without telling anyone. But the circumstances here raised red flags. A couple supposedly went away with friends, but their cars are still in the garage. They hadn't called into work. Nobody knew who this mystery couple was that they were with. It just did not feel right. So that same day, deputies reached out to law enforcement in Langlade County, where the cabin was located, and asked them to check in. And to nobody's surprise, nobody was there. That evening, detectives stopped by the Halderson house to speak with Chandler and take a look around. On the surface, everything looked fairly ordinary, but the more they looked, the more little things stood out. Both of the family's cars were still parked in the garage, the same way they'd been days earlier. Inside the house, an officer noted that a glass panel in the fireplace was missing. Chandler explained it the same way he had to a friend, that he had broken it while he was tossing a ball for the dogs, cutting his toe in the process. And he repeated that there had been blood everywhere. Yet again, there wasn't much to back that up. And I'm sorry, but a cut toe and blood everywhere, like those two things just don't go together. One of the detectives also got a closer look at Chandler's injury. The bandaged toe didn't look fresh, not red or raw the way you would expect it to be if it had been cut recently. It seemed more like an older injury than something that had happened within the past couple of days. The house also was not in chaos, but it didn't feel quite right either. Nothing was screaming crime scene yet, but detectives had an uneasy feeling when they left that night. By the next morning, July 8th, investigators were already shifting the case into higher gear. Bart and Krista had now been gone for nearly a week. Their son's story about a sudden trip with nameless friends was not adding up. Detectives decided to start digging into Chandler's recent movements and the places that he had been spotted. Two locations came up quickly. One was the rural property in Cottage Grove that was owned by Kat's family, where Chandler had been seen on July 4th and 5th. and the other was the patch of DNR land in Roxbury, where a witness thought that they saw someone who kind of looked like Chandler carrying a backpack over the holiday weekend. So that morning, deputies headed out to the farm in Cottage Grove to just look around. Kat's family cooperated fully and gave investigators access to their land. Out near the shed in the wooded area where Chandler had been spotted days earlier, deputies made a discovery that changed the case completely. Under a pile of branches, partially hidden from view, was a human torso. Nearby, investigators also found cutting tools, a saw blade, scissors, and bolt cutters concealed inside of a submerged water tank. The scene was gruesome, and there was no longer any doubt. This was not a missing persons case anymore. This was a homicide investigation. Now, at that point, investigators didn't know for sure whose remains they had found, but the location, combined with the fact that Bart and Krista had vanished without a trace, really narrowed the possibilities. Back in Windsor, Chandler was still doing his best to keep up appearances. In fact, on July 8th, he even went door to door in his neighborhood asking about security cameras, telling neighbors that he was just trying to see if they'd caught any signs of his parents. One Ring doorbell camera captured him asking about footage of the street. To anyone who didn't know any better, it looked like a son worried about his missing parents. But for detectives, the evidence was starting to point in a much different direction. When deputies uncovered the torso at the Cottage Grove farm on July 8th, the case shifted dramatically, and in just a few minutes, everything changed. Something violent had happened, and investigators needed to figure out who was responsible. The scene itself was chilling. The torso had been partially buried under branches, almost as if someone had tried to disguise it, but just hadn't gone far enough. While investigators were making this discovery in Cottage Grove, Chandler was busy back in Windsor. That same day, he was knocking on neighbors' doors, asking about their security cameras, and on the surface, it looked like a concerned son just canvassing for leads. But detectives who later reviewed this behavior found it suspicious because Chandler wasn't just asking if his parents' car was caught on camera. He was specifically checking what cameras might have seen in the days surrounding their disappearance. And it almost seemed like he was taking inventory of what evidence they might be building against him or what evidence might exist against him. Later that day, Chandler even spoke to a local news reporter, but he agreed to an interview as long as it was audio only. He did not want to be on camera. He repeated the story that he'd been telling everyone, that his parents left with another couple. Maybe they made it to White Lake, maybe they didn't. He sounded uncertain, even worried, but something about the way that he dodged the spotlight just felt odd. Before we go on, I want to take a moment to thank the sponsor of today's episode, which is Armoire. Armoire makes getting dressed easy. With a clothing rental membership from Armoire, build the perfect wardrobe with brands that are high quality, unique, and recommended just for you. All you have to do is take a 5-minute style quiz and select items from your dynamic, personalized closet. The styles show up at your door in as little as 2 days. Then when you're ready for new clothes, you just swap them out for more new to you styles. I will admit I was a little skeptical at first because I'm not the type of person who dresses up very often, but you guys, this is actually so perfect and I'm genuinely so excited about this new membership with Armoire. And I want to tell you what the process was like for me. I got onto their website and I mean, there were so much to choose from. I ended up choosing 6 items and I was kind of like, we'll see what happens, you know, not sure how they were going to arrive, if they were going to be like noticeably used or what. But listen, 2 days after I placed my like case order, it showed up on my doorstep. Everything was like, when I pulled it out of the bag, everything was neatly folded and then tied up in this really pretty little bow. And I got so excited. I'm actually taking a trip to Dallas with my daughter soon, so I'm gonna wear an outfit for that. Austin and I are gonna go to a Teddy Swims concert, so I got an outfit for that. I'm like, you guys, I'm so excited about this because everything showed up in great condition. I mean, I think it looks brand new. And it's $900 worth of clothes that I'm renting for less than $100. And the best part for me is that I can just send it back. I don't typically dress up that often, but this is so perfect for like the random occasions that I do dress up without having to go and like splurge on an entire new outfit that I might only wear once. I will be honest, I feel guilty that over half of my closet has only been worn once, if at all. And there are even a few items that are going to Goodwill with the tags on them. So I love being on trend and having new things to wear, but I hate the waste that I'm creating when I do that, right? So Armoire allows me to rent these high quality designer clothes for any occasion and then just send it back. If you've got a wedding or a job interview or just like anything that you just want to kind of dress up a little bit. But the nice thing is they also have athleisure. So I got this really cute Kate Spade anorak jacket that I can wear with like a pair of leggings, and it just kind of makes you feel a little more dressed up while you're still dressed down. I also got some really cool floral wide leg pants from Steve Madden with this really cute denim halter like front vest top to go with it. And just in case that doesn't work out, I got another option too to go with the pants, and then I can have like kind of two outfits in one. You guys, I cannot tell you enough how excited I am about this. And right now my listeners can give Armoire a try and get up to 50% off their first month. That's up to $125 off. Just visit armoire.style/mama. That's armoire.style, armoire.style/mama to get up to 50% off your first month and never worry about what to wear again. Please try Armoire today. And if you do, tag me in the pictures of your outfits so I can get some inspiration and kind of see what y'all are getting. But this is so fun. I'm really, really excited about this. Thanks again to Armoire for sponsoring today's episode. And now back to the story.
Wayfair's Labor Day clearance is here. Right now, score up to 70% off everything home, plus fast shipping on everything right to your door. Shop now through September 2nd at wayfair.com.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
By the evening of July 8th, detectives decided to bring Chandler back in for questioning. At that point, he didn't know what investigators had found at the farm. Sitting in the interview room, Chandler stuck to his story about the cabin trip. He explained again that Bart and Krista had left early that morning, yada, yada, yada. But detectives pushed back harder this time. They told him things are not adding up, that no one could verify who this couple is. No one had seen Bart and Krista leave. This story was not aligning with the facts. Chandler stayed quiet. Eventually, after a long silence, he let out a sigh and said, "Okay, yeah, okay, lawyer." And that was it. With those words, the interview was over. As soon as he invoked his right to an attorney, detectives placed him under arrest for providing false information in a missing persons case. It wasn't the full picture yet. They hadn't officially named him in his parents' deaths, but the pieces were starting to stack up pretty quickly. And by arresting him on this other charge, they could at least hold him in place while they figured everything else out, giving him less of an opportunity to run or go commit suicide. Even as Chandler sat in custody that night, investigators continued piecing together what they had so far. Officers who escorted him out noticed scratches on his legs and bruises on his knees. It looked like he had been moving through some rough brush, which stood out because the farm where the torso was discovered was very thick with briars and thorny berry bushes. The injuries on Chandler matched the terrain pretty perfectly. Detectives also began reviewing his digital activity. On the morning of July 8th, just hours before Bart's torso was discovered, Chandler had been on Google searching things like, quote, body found Wisconsin, quote, woman's body found in Wisconsin, quote, Wisconsin dismembered body found, and even, quote, Bart and Krista. It's almost as if he was checking the news, waiting to see if anyone had stumbled across what he had done. When investigators saw those search terms, it was like a spotlight just beamed down on Chandler. No one else in the world would have had reason to be Googling that at 9:44 a.m. on the exact morning Bart's remains were about to be recovered. By July 9th, the Dane County Sheriff's Office announced that the investigation was now a homicide case. They confirmed that human remains had been found at the Cottage Grove property, though they didn't share publicly yet whose they were. At the same time, they named Chandler Halderson as the prime suspect. He was booked into jail on a $1 million bond and faced his first round of charges: first-degree homicide, mutilation of a corpse, hiding a corpse, and giving false information to investigators. At that point, Krista was still missing. Bart's remains were found, but there was still no sign of Krista. Friends and family clung to the slim hope that maybe she was still alive, that somehow she had escaped whatever had happened to Bart, but detectives already feared otherwise. Almost a week later, on July 14th, investigators followed up on that witness tip from July 3rd, the one about a man resembling Chandler walking through DNR land in Roxbury with a backpack. Search teams combed the marshy area along the Wisconsin River, and what they found removed all doubt. Scattered across the property were more human remains. Dental records and forensic testing later confirmed they belonged to Krista. A nearby trail camera even captured Chandler in that same area around July 3rd, tying him directly to the site. At that point, there were no more theories, no more missing persons bulletins, no more hopeful speculation. Both Bart and Krista were dead. Their remains hidden in separate locations out in the wild, and Chandler was the only link between them. By mid-July, the investigation into Bart and Krista's disappearance had moved far beyond missing persons. At this point, both parents were gone, their remains found in two different rural locations, and Chandler was sitting in jail. The question now was no longer if something terrible had happened, but how and why. Investigators needed to know where the crime had occurred, what exactly had been done, and what evidence there was that tied Chandler directly to it. The answers came a little slowly at first, but then they began to snowball. Detectives went back to the family's Windsor home and they took a closer look. The first walkthrough hadn't revealed much, but now they knew what to look for. In the basement, they noticed a large freestanding freezer that was oddly spotless, so clean it almost looked out of place. Family friends later confirmed that it was a recent addition, something Chandler had brought in not long before Bart and Krista had disappeared. Testing revealed human blood in the freezer's drain, suggesting that it had been used to store something far more gruesome than groceries. Forensics teams sprayed luminol across the basement floor, a chemical that glows in the presence of blood, even after it's been attempted to be cleaned up. And under the blue light, the room lit up. Footprints and streaks marked areas where blood had once been. To investigators, it was clear whatever had happened to Bart and Krista started here inside their own home. Another small but telling discovery came from the upstairs fireplace. Sifting through the ashes, detectives found a tiny bone fragment. It looked like someone had tried unsuccessfully to burn part of a body in the fireplace. On July 13th, while Chandler was in custody, detectives searched the home again. Tucked away behind a shelf, they found a single spent shell casing, a 39mm round, and that detail meant something important because weeks earlier, Chandler had asked a friend if he could borrow a rifle for target practice, and that friend handed over an SKS semi-automatic rifle, which happened to fire that exact ammunition. Ballistics later tied the casing directly to that type of rifle. Investigators believed it was the weapon that killed Bart, a gunshot wound to his abdomen that shattered his spine. Remember the text also that Chandler said he got from his mom on July 4th about going to a parade? Well, investigators had their doubts about it from the start, and digging into digital records confirmed why. For one thing, there was obviously no parade in White Lake that year. But for another, Chandler had Krista's phone. And on July 28th, weeks into the investigation, deputies found both Bart's and Krista's cell phones, along with their driver's licenses, stuffed inside shoes in the garage, wrapped in tin foil and paper towels. It looked like Chandler had tried to block the phones from being tracked, not realizing that the truth was going to come out anyway. Now, that parade text, it turned out, was nothing more than Chandler sending a text from his mom's phone to his own in an effort to make her look alive after she was already gone. Chandler's internet activity also painted an even clearer picture. On July 8th, the same morning deputies discovered Bart's torso, Chandler had been searching for things like body found Wisconsin, Bart and Krista, Wisconsin dismembered body found, And it was chilling, but the timing was so precise that investigators were sure that he was checking to see if the remains had been discovered yet. Because at that point, he didn't know that Bart had been found. I don't even think he had been found at that point. But it just, the timing was so coincidental that it was too much of a coincidence to be a coincidence, if that makes sense. Now, Snapchat data and cell phone records also placed Chandler near the very spots where both his parents' remains were later recovered. The Cottage Grove property belonging to Kat's family and the marshland in Roxbury where Krista's remains were found. All of this put Chandler's girlfriend, Kat, and her family in a deeply uncomfortable position. They had welcomed Chandler into their lives, let him spend time on their farm, and trusted him as a part of their daughter's life. It was Kat's family's property where Bart's torso was ultimately found, just steps from the shed where Chandler had been seen on July 5th. Neighbors recalled later seeing him out there looking despondent with the vultures circling overhead, but none of them realized at the time what that meant. Kat herself testified that over the holiday weekend, Chandler did seem off. He wasn't as talkative as usual. He'd made vague excuses about why his parents weren't around. But like everyone else, she had no idea the nightmare that was actually unfolding. Even after the torso was found on her family's land, detectives emphasized that neither Kat nor her parents had any knowledge or involvement. They had simply been unlucky enough to let the wrong person onto their property, a person who saw their quiet, wooded acreage as the perfect hiding spot. By late July, the evidence was overwhelming. Blood in the basement, the freezer, the bone fragment in the fireplace, the hidden shell casing, the phones in the garage, the internet searches, the rifle, the remains on Kat's family's property, and the trail camera showing Chandler near the Roxbury dump site. I mean, it couldn't be more open and shut as that. Every thread pointed in the same direction. By the end of July 2021, Chandler Halderson had been formally charged with two counts of first-degree intentional homicide, two counts of mutilating a corpse, and two counts of hiding a corpse. Prosecutors believed they had an airtight case built on forensics, digital evidence, and witness testimony. And still, Chandler pleaded not guilty. So the trial was set for January of 2022. Over the course of 2 weeks, jurors heard a steady stream of testimony that pieced the investigation together. Prosecutors walked them through the digital trail, all the Google searches, the Snapchat location pings, all of that. They presented the parade text from Krista's phone and explained how investigators had found both of the parents' phones hidden in the garage, wrapped in foil and paper towel and shoved in a shoe. Like, it couldn't have been more obvious. Forensic experts testified about the blood in the basement, the luminol reactions showing the cleanup attempts, and the human blood discovered in the freezer drain. They showed the jury the spent shell casing in the basement, and they tied it to the rifle that Chandler had borrowed weeks earlier. The friend that lent him the gun even testified. Jurors also saw evidence from the dump sites, photos of the torso recovered at Kat's family's farm, the tools pulled from the submerged water tank, the trail camera image that was placing him there. The prosecution really emphasized Chandler's behavior in the days after July 1st. And piece by piece, the state laid out a timeline that began with a confrontation inside the Halderson home on July 1st and ended with Bart and Krista's remains scattered in two separate locations. So Chandler's defense team had very little room to maneuver. They argued that the case was circumstantial, pointing out that no one had actually seen Chandler commit the murders because, yeah, most murderers try not to broadcast their crimes. They try to get away with it. They questioned the reliability of the luminol testing, noting that it can react to substances like bleach as well as blood. They tried to cast doubt on whether Chandler's internet searches were really as incriminating as they appeared. But without an alternate theory or suspect to point to, their arguments really struggled to gain any traction. The evidence was simply too detailed and too specific. But the biggest unanswered question here was why? Why? Chandler didn't have a history of violence. He hadn't been abused. He wasn't in trouble with the law before. By all accounts, Bart and Krista were very supportive and loving parents. The motive prosecutors outlined wasn't fueled by rage or revenge. It was fueled by desperation and lies. Chandler had been pretending for years, pretending to be in college, pretending to work, pretending he had a job lined up with SpaceX. He went so far as to create fake email accounts, impersonating school officials and company reps, forwarding fabricated messages to his father to explain away any of the delays. It honestly sounds very eerily similar to Casey Anthony trying to convince her parents that she had a job for the months that led up to her killing her daughter. By late June of 2021, Bart had been pressing for answers. He had emailed one of the advisors, the quote-unquote advisors that Chandler invented, and demanded an in-person meeting. The excuses, rescheduled Zoom calls, COVID delays, payroll glitches, were no longer cutting it. On July 1st, Bart confronted Chandler directly about the truth. In fact, Bart had called the school pretending to be Chandler at one point to ask one of the advisors about his degree and his classes and if he was, in fact, on track to graduate. And this advisor broke the news to Bart, who he thought was Chandler, that no, he's not enrolled. He's not even on track. None of this is true. So by Bart making that phone call, he knew that Chandler was full of shit. So that confrontation, prosecutors argued, was the final breaking point. Rather than admit that he had been lying for years, Chandler chose to eliminate the people who were about to expose him. So after nearly 2 weeks of testimony, it took jurors only about 2 hours of deliberation to reach a verdict. In January of 2022, Chandler Halderson was found guilty on all counts, 2 counts of first degree intentional homicide, 2 counts of mutilating a corpse, and 2 counts of hiding a corpse. At sentencing in March, the judge imposed the maximum penalty, life in prison without the possibility of parole for each murder to be served consecutively. The lies, the cover-ups, the gruesome disposal of his parents' remains, none of it left room for any leniency. So Chandler Halderson, at just 24 years old, would spend the rest of his life in prison. Now, I have covered cases like this before where someone murders someone else just so they won't have to face the truth or admit to a lie. And that leap, that desperation of not wanting the lie to be revealed, so much so that you actually take a human life, is something I cannot wrap my head around. And I guess it's just as baffling as spouses who kill rather than get divorced. At the end of the day, most of these stories are fueled and motivated by ego, greed, or a desperate need for control. Let me know what you think of this story in the comments on Spotify. You can find me on Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok at mama.mysterypodcast. And if you are a bigger fan of Mama Mystery, you can join our Patreon at patreon.com/mamamystery, where you get a little extra bonus content and some ad-free episodes. Now, until next week, if you haven't already, make sure you go watch that documentary because we have to talk about it. I have to talk about it to somebody. But until then, stay curious, stay vigilant.
Mom, Mystery, out.
A nice little cameo from yours truly, who is so missed. That's Austin.
Yeah, Mama, Mystery, out.
Bye.
Big news! Wayfair's end of season sale is here. It's Wayfair's Labor Day clearance. Right now, you can score up to 70% off everything home at Wayfair. Plus amazing doorbuster deals and 24-hour surprise flash deals on home finds in every style. This is your last chance to score end of season savings, and it's happening now. Did we mention fast shipping on everything? Don't wait. Head to wayfair.com today to score up to 70% off now through September 2nd.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Lowe's has the Labor Day deals you need to give your home a new look. Buy one, get one free, select interior paint via Visa gift card rebate. Then add the final touch with 2 for $8 on select 2.5 or 3-quart Mums. Refresh your home and save big while doing it. Lowe's, we help you save. Valid through 9/3. Mums offer in-store only. Selection varies by location. While supplies last. More terms and restrictions apply. See Lowe's.com/rebates for details.